So last time you guys got into no, quiet, silence, silencio.
Previously on Bad Heroes.
Should we split up to look around town or stay together?
I think we want to go to the very good blacksmith, so if you
want to
go
there. I want to go to the apothecary.
Okay.
Welcome to Very Good Blacksmiths. What can I do for you?
My associate and I are paranormal investigators.
That sounds like bullshit.
What everybody in this room sees is a tear in reality, and crawling through this tear are enormous tentacles.
Iria casts ghost sound.
He believes you.
Try to remain calm. Your town is in grave danger. We need to call an emergency meeting. Can you help me with that?
Yeah, I can call a town meeting.
You guys eventually arrive at the building nearest to Sanguine Silva's.
Greetings, friend.
Have you decided to add any wolves from around the world to your collection?
No wolves around here. What can I do for you?
Well, what's your best seller here?
Nettle has actually started looking kind of uncomfortable and pulls out a little sign and goes,
whoop, it looks like it's lunchtime.
I know I'm not the best at this, but that was strange, right?
There's an aversion to it about the wolves.
Ready or not, you guys see that you have called a town meeting.
Citizens of Sosalia, my colleagues and I have traced a weakness in the barrier between the Shadow Plane and this world to here. And when it breaks, unspeakable horrors will descend upon us all. We're here to help. All we need is information.
And Ephra stands up and gets ready to shut this whole shit down.
Gideon blows the whistle.
All right, so last time you guys got into just like all kinds of trouble.
That doesn't sound like us.
Nope.
It does sound exactly like you. And you guys called a town hall because of tentacles.
Okay, when you say we.
Reva called a town hall because of tentacles.
Well, technically the blacksmith called the town hall.
Oh, jeez.
It was tentacles plus Sosalia equal town hall meeting. So we've had the meeting. Reva talked bullshit for a little while. And then Gideon finally had mercy on her and blew the whistle. The whistle that causes canines of any kind, including werewolves, pain. So, you blow that whistle.
I blow that whistle.
Oh, no.
I don't know what you expected.
Okay, Gideon, you blow that whistle.
Mm-hmm.
And Reva, 84 people stare at you in utter confusion because none of them are fucking werewolves.
Damn it.
Why do they stare at Reva if...
Nobody can hear the whistle except for...
Oh.
Effer is standing, not holding her ears, not grimacing. She doesn't seem able to see the whistle, but she quickly looks from Reva to the other three of you, taking inventory. And when her eyes fall on you, Gideon, you know by the fury in her face that she knows exactly what you're holding.
How big is this whistle?
I mean, it's a whistle. She can see it. Unless are you hiding it?
I was thinking that I was concealing it, like, in a fist. Like, I just raised my fist up to my...
Okay, roll stealthy whistle.
I'm going to roll stealthy whistle. What do I add to that?
You add nothing. Do you have a stealth modifier?
Or a dex modifier.
Oh, yeah, it's based on dex. Okay, let's see. It's a 19 plus 2, baby.
Okay, she doesn't see the whistle. Take it all back. But... she knows you four are up to something. And she says, what on earth are you doing? You four, outside, now. And the rest of you, this is a load of bullshit. Go about your day. Meeting dismissed.
As Gideon follows Tonrer out, she's going to say, did you notice those rafters in there?
Tonrer will say nothing.
What the fuck is this whistle?
I was just going to say, did everyone see that?
Oh, I saw it immediately. It is front and center on my screen.
Rev just sent a photo of a child blowing a gigantic whistle, which I guess was my assumption.
Yeah. How big of a whistle did you arm me with?
I don't know. I pictured you just sort of dramatically standing up and being like, hoo, but I guess you actually stealthily went,
yeah.
The whistle is somehow shaped like a saxophone, just so you know.
I forgot to tell you, the whistle is the size of a saxophone.
Some Kenny G starts flowing out of it.
But opposite, because if you're a dog, you hate it. So
I mean, that, again, that's Kenny G.
Ooh,
these are the same picture.
Oofa doofa. All right, do you four go outside?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go with them.
Begrudgingly. There's a begrudging look on Tonmir's face about everything that is transpiring, and he's not happy with any of it because he's the only one that wasn't actively participating in this. We got somebody whistling, we got somebody making sounds, we got somebody casting tentacles through a make-believe void.
You couldn't hear the whistle, you didn't know.
As if I didn't know you had it on you.
To be fair, Reva did just rule out like 85 people, which is pretty good. As much as these NPCs are going to drag her forever, that was actually, like, just meta-wise, that was pretty great. Reva, you headed outside, or does Ephra have to grab you?
No, Reva is heading out with the air of, like, a teenager who's been caught trying to, like, sneak out at night or something.
Is that how Tonry is walking out?
Yep, yeah, no, very much so.
As you four head outside, the rest of the town sort of files out, looking like very confused. And there are still a lot of children crying. And I think just because of the energy of the crying, Ephra's daughter, who's in one of her arms, is also crying. And so she shoots you like a nasty glare at Reva and then spends a minute bouncing her kid. And then she has Ivan attached to her other hand, who like keeps casually trying to reach towards your pockets. And she reaches out and smacks his hand. No, stop that.
No touch.
A whole gold piece wasn't enough for Ivan.
No, he's had a taste of...
The good life.
Yeah.
a taste of buying a horse. And he would like an additional horse.
For what?
I don't know. So you guys are standing there, and Ephra eventually folds her arms and says, "So, what do you have to say for yourself?"
Gideon looks to Reva.
Iria also looks to Reva.
Tonmer's looking at everybody else. And you know what? I'm going to throw it in there. He's going to... Yes, what do you have to say?
Reva looks a little cornered and she says, "We can explain. There is a perfectly reasonable explanation for all of this. Right, guys?"
Tonmir folds his arms.
You know, I did see those tentacles. So, Reva and the blacksmith, are you calling your blacksmith a liar?
Oh, I think he saw something, but I don't think he saw something real.
I saw something too, and it seemed pretty real.
Tonmir shakes his head.
Iria, roll bluff.
Not diplomacy? Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Can I do diplomacy?
Nope.
That's the one you trained, isn't it? That's the one you put stat modifiers into it, isn't it?
How did you know?
Bluff makes the most sense because you're straight up lying.
Yeah, I know it's not real. Oh my. 11.
Yeah, that's not going to do it.
It was a 3 on the dice.
Something tells me that Ephra is very perceptive.
Ephra is the barkeep, correct?
Yes, Ephra is the barkeep. Okay. Ephra is the Ifrit barkeep. Her hair is on fire. And I think as she's looking at you guys smell something burning. And then you realize that her hair has actually burned through the hair ties on the back and her braid is starting to unfurl itself.
Hmm.
Tonmir's still looking at everybody else.
He's going to be like, "Are you okay? Your hair is on fire. More so than usual."
"I spoke to Nettle. I know what you're doing. You're hunting wolves. So, if I haven't been perfectly clear with you, there are no damn wolves in Sosalia. And if you don't stop crying wolf, I swear to whatever gods you hold dear, I'll drag you for to Coldon myself. Now, you get whatever traveling supplies you need, and you get the hell out of my town."
Can you spell that fort name again?
Drag you for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
I know my accent leaves something to be desired.
I like it.
Koldan is the nearest town that is to the east. And that's where this like long trade road actually heads. It's the only thing that's connected to Sosalia.
Now hold, okay. I understand we've gotten off to a very bad start. And we probably shouldn't have done that, but we really needed to get some information. And we're not trying to hunt wolves necessarily. We just have some knowledge about something going on that might be not great for the townspeople here, and we want to help in any way that we can. So I'm sorry that we've kind of gotten off at a bad start. We're not here to harm anyone or to hunt anything or to do anything malicious. We're really, you know, just trying to help and figure out what is going on.
You're angling for that diplomacy check, aren't you? Because you already flunked your bluff check. You trying to diplomacy me? Go ahead.
Okay. It's a 20, not nat.
A dirty 20.
A dirty, dirty 20.
Her hair, which was starting to like untangle, and you were actually starting to see like rise up behind her a little bit, like silhouette her.
She was going Super Saiyan.
She was going a little Super Saiyan, and her hair has actually sort of calmed down, but she still looks pissed. So she looks to the other three of you.
Okay, well, with that explanation, Tonrir is probably just going to huff and say nothing, actually. He's going to say nothing. He's just going to huff quietly. I just rolled for that. He's going to say nothing, and he's going to continue to let the group talk because he's also trying not to dig a deeper hole, and he's not the best at words, especially with anything other than elves. So,
how about you, Gids? You got anything?
Gideon's still looking to Reva.
By the way, Iria, your diplomacy roll, you stopped this from becoming a fight.
Okay.
So it did do something.
Good.
Reva is finally going to speak up. All right. Look, I'm sorry about what happened. The truth is...
Tonrir looks very pointedly at you when you say truth is.
I'm holding my face in my hands.
Oh my God.
Iria's holding her breath because she just calmed things down to a point where we could reasonably talk.
Gideon is just looking on at Reva, but her eyebrows are slowly rising.
The truth is, we were sent here to do something. We do need information, but at the end of the day, I'm going to level with you. The less you know about what we're doing, the better. So I came up with a story to move things along, and it didn't really go that well, and I apologize. But the truth of the matter is, if we can just get the information we need to move on and get out of your hair, and she looks at Ephra's hair, the easier it'll be for everybody.
Roll diplomacy.
14 plus 10, so 24.
I think she lifts Ivan into her other arm, and she has one kid in each arm, and she stands there and bounces them for a second, and she says, fine. What information?
Tonner is going to look at both of the kids that she has in tow and says, I don't know if the information that we would seek is appropriate for your children's ears, lest they become more fearful of things that are going on.
Fine. Ivan, take Sylvia. Go home. And she drops them down, and he takes her hand, and they scamper off.
Okay, here we go. I'm rolling again. Ooh. Hey, Tonrir's first going to look to see if anybody's going to continue before he speaks.
No, Reva looks to Tonrir.
Okay. My name is Tonrir Senni, and I hail from a once great forest that was named Rothawin. I am under the employ, forcefully so, of the Queen. And we are here specifically for werewolves. It is my hope that we are able to achieve what we're looking to do while helping as many people along the way as possible. We are not very fond of the Queen.
Roll diplomacy.
17.
Now, everybody roll perception.
13.
2 plus 5.
21.
20.
Iria, Gideon, As soon as Tonrir says werewolves, Ephra instantly gets so fucking nervous. But she does a pretty good job covering it. She schools her face back into something neutral very quickly. At the end of that explanation, she says, "Well, I appreciate your honesty, but werewolves. I mean, now I know someone's been telling you tall tales. Didn't I tell you this is a nice town? Not the kind of place for a monster hunt." "No, you're in the wrong place, I'm afraid. Now please, you four start behaving or I'll have you run out of town. Got it? And don't let me catch you in those woods. There's nothing there." And with that, she sighs and leaves rather quickly.
Tonrir nods. And after Ephra's out of earshot, Tonrir looks at Gideon and says, "Did you pick up anything else from those choice of words?"
Not only that, but... And then Gideon turns to Iria and says, "Did you notice her reaction?"
Werewolves, definitely. Just hearing that term hit something in her really quickly, but she was able to compose herself. She definitely knows something more than she's letting on, and she is very interested in us not poking around, which makes me feel like if we do poke around, we'll find something that isn't in her favor.
She seemed almost scared.
Mm-hmm.
Tonrir nods and says, "But I also think she told us, in a way, exactly where to go."
"I do believe you're right."
"She told us explicitly that we will not find anything here. It seems we must venture further in."
"But she said not to go in the forest." I'm just kidding.
"But also, she never goes in the forest. She told us that, so she'll never know."
Classic.
"It does raise the question, though. Why would she say then that she wouldn't want to catch us out there?"
"To be threatening?"
"To let us know that's where we need to find her."
"When you say her, what do you mean?"
"Ephra. My theory is that she's covering herself, or she's afraid that somebody else will hear something. But she said she never ventures out there, and yet she told us just now that she doesn't want to catch us out there, which infers to me that she does indeed go out that way. She told us that we are not going to find anything here. So it is my suggestion that we get the provisions that we need to, and then we follow where this path breaks off and see what we can find in the forest. And to that end, I do have some things prepared to help us with that."
"I agree with you. I have a feeling that it's not Ephra that we'll find in the forest."
"But she may have informants."
Yeah, I think she knows what is in that forest that she doesn't want us to find.
All the more reason for us to go."
"Agreed. What are those provisions that you have?"
"It's not so much a provision as a skill that I have. I will be able to make sure that each of us will be able to pass without trace into the forest. Let's see. Pass without trace. The subject or subjects of the spell do not leave footprints or a scent while moving, and it lasts for 5 hours.
Okay. It's a mid to late morning now, and the town is actually pretty busy right now because everybody is still heading back to where they were. So you see, you know, that figure who is covered from head to toe. You see Nettle heading back. They're heading back actually together because they live on the far end of town. You see everybody that you've bumped into is headed back their way. You see the blacksmith and he kind of shoots you a dirty look. And yeah, it's pretty busy out right now.
Iria just shrugs at the blacksmith like, "Oh, sorry."
Riva gives a sheepish wave.
"What's the plan, my dudes?
Can we get some food? Iria's hungry." Iria says that in third person.
Tonrir nods and says, "We can, but we don't have long before the moon is full. We need to act quickly."
Yeah, as far as you guys know, this is the last night that it will not be the full moon. So I think that you guys know that if you need food, then the place you need to go is Smudge's General Store.
To Smudge's General Store I go.
All right, you guys head back towards Smudge's general store. You see once again displayed in the window a glittering blue beetle in the center of what looks like sticky amber, next to a sign that invites you to lick the bug out of the amber.
Reva goes back to the beetle.
And through the window, you see shelves that are packed, like overly packed, like so packed that you're like a little concerned that they might fall over or that this whole building will just sort of come down, packed with supplies, lots of food. Smudge's general store will have like the basic supplies that you can buy in Pathfinder, more or less. Everything on the sort of cheaper end. Nothing really nice, but like, you know, rations, sleeping bags, things like that will all be here.
Well, the good news is we already have a tent. And she looks to Iria as she says, and someone who can assemble it.
I just took it apart. I can try.
Tonra will go into Smudge's and just do the transactions.
Okay. You walk in and this guy who looks actually a lot like a used car salesman comes up and sees you looking at the bug and he says, hey, listen, I see you looking at that. You strike me as the kind of person who can get things done. Do you want to lick that bug?
Yes.
Good.
Wait, hold on. Were you at the back of this? Because Tonrair went in first into the store. Where are you in the order of people?
I'm at the display window.
Okay.
Like I just sort of trailed in and then just hung out around the front of the shop.
And the shopkeeper immediately walked up and like, hey, you look like a person who could lick this bug. Do you want to lick this bug?
Yeah. Tonrair is going to attempt to come back out and grab Reva by the arm to pull into the store.
Oh, no.
Reva lets herself be pulled in, but she says to Smudge, I'll come back later.
Smudge follows you guys around and he comes up to you, Tonrair, as you guys are sort of marching along the aisles looking for supplies. And he sort of rubs his hands together and he says, you strike me as a group that doesn't shy away from trouble. I saw that little exchange with Ephra. Wouldn't read too much into it. Hot-tempered are Ephra. I'm a man of business. I like to collect rare objects from around the world. Would 4 hardy travelers like yourselves have any such object?
Tonrair simply shakes his head.
Well, what do you have to offer in exchange?
Gold. Heard you're looking for information, too. And he, like, leans forward so his one eye is really close to you.
Do you perchance collect rare coins?
You're going to scam this man. You're going to scam this man with a fake coin.
No, it's a real coin.
Is it? Oh, okay. I think he like holds out his hand to check it out.
Where is the trust? There is no trust. It's gone.
It is gone. His eyebrows are like bouncing up and down and he holds out his hand.
Reva reaches into her pouch.
Oh, because you were in a mirror for 100 years.
Yeah. She pulls out a silver coin and shows it to him. This, my friend, is one of the last remaining coins to survive the relegation period of the Kingdom of Vire. And as you can see, it is in mint condition.
I think he takes it and he bites it very gently. And then he says, minted before the rise of Fane. Minted before the rise of Fane. This is a good coin. What do you want for this coin?
What do you have?
Can give you your groceries for free.
She's going to look over to Tonrair for what they actually need.
I thought she was going to look at the lollipop.
By lollipop, do you mean bug?
The bug pop.
The bug pop.
So right now we got 2 used car salesmen trying to sell things to each other.
Well, if you're willing to work with us on our groceries, which I would imagine won't be too numerous, then the only other thing that I would ask for is information just about this area. See, Tonrir's learned to stop asking about wolves. 3rd time's a charm.
Yeah, I can tell you something interesting, something real interesting. Let's go ahead and check you out, and then I'll tell you.
Tonrair nods.
Tell me really quick what you guys pick out.
How long does a provision last again? It's like...
Trail rations are 5 silver piece per trail ration. The listed price is a day's worth of food.
Yeah, so he'll grab 3 of those.
Okay. 3 trail rations. Anybody else need anything?
I think I was already all set.
Yeah, I think Iria's good, but she's going to go up to the guy, Smudge, and she's going to pull out her journal and very carefully, like it's a delicate thing, and be like, now this is an original copy. Someday it's going to be worth so much. Like, not even, you can't even put a price on this. So Yeah, what would you give for that?
Roll. What do you think? What would you consider this? Roll charisma. Because you're trying to convince him that you're such a masterstroke artist that this is going to be worth a bunch of money.
God damn it. It's a 5. 5.
I think he looks at it for a second. He says, ooh, does this belong to a famous bard, someone I know? And then picks it up, looks at it, and goes, who's Iria Clawstrike?
It's me. And she picks up her hang drum and, like, bings it a little bit.
He very gently hands it back. And I think he finishes checking you guys out. He's flipping that coin the whole time. And he says, all right, groceries, good. What did you want to know? Something about the area?
Tonmer nods and says, couldn't help but notice crossing over the river that there's a distinct difference in the feel of the air and the coloration of the trees. I'm fairly familiar with how the roots to the stems work, and this is quite abnormal, even for all of that I have traveled. Do you know what causes that?
Here's what I can tell you. The woods east of Socialia used to have an autumn this time of year, too. Or so I've heard. A real deep autumn, red, just like that. Just like Sanguine Silvis. But now, only Sanguine Silvis has an autumn like this. And you know why? It's because Vyr got hotter. Every place outside the capital got hotter, or so that's what people tell me. But not Sanguine Silvis. He kind of rubs his nose for a second. He says, now, to me, to a smart man, that means there's something old and powerful in there that can keep the weather moving as it always has, hmm? So, it might not be the brightest to go poking around. Got it?
As he's noting that, Tonrir starts looking down and his eyes are slightly darting in that kind of thoughtful fashion and very clearly thinking about something. But he just kind of shakes his head from that moment of thought and says, that's very good and that does make sense. It's just a curiosity for a botanist like myself.
Fair, fair. Well, you find anything else interesting, you know where to come sell it. Smudges. I collect everything.
Is that his slogan?
It is. Smudges. I collect everything.
Except good poem books.
Except good poem books. Wah, wah. He claps you guys on the shoulder and sees you guys out.
Okay. Tonmer will do the quick party check to make sure everybody is good to go for their exploration.
Let's see. We'll roll for that. I'm not ready. I rolled a 2.
2% ready.
Iria says that she has to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
So she does that.
Very good.
And now?
And now she's ready.
Reva rolled a 4 in readiness.
Yeah, I have a feeling Reva's never really ready.
No, Reva is about 50% ready at all times.
Perfect.
Reva's really flying by the seat of her pants is the energy that I get from Reva.
Tonrir looks to them and says, if we were brazen, we could take the road immediately into the forest, but then we would pass everybody and let them know exactly where we're going. My proposal is that we work our way a little bit further north on the bank of the river and then cut into the woods just before a farm that's up that way.
Sneaky. I like it.
I like a little adventure.
Guessing Gideon's reading.
Gideon's just writing in her journal about what has gone down in the town and everything, the shops.
Okay.
She had nothing to buy, so she was just kind of standing around and every now and then looking up at what everyone was doing, but mostly just in her own little world.
So your guys' plan is to head back out past the Covenant Inn as if you're leaving towards Coldon, and then to veer up into the woods and follow the woods west until you head back onto that path that leads into the woods. Instead of walking through town.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, perfect. If you guys want to do that, I would have you guys probably just roll stealth, right? Because you guys are trying to do it sneakily.
I'm going to give them trackless step.
Okay.
So that way there's no scent or footprint left. And I'm going to do that for them before we leave the main path. So that way we don't even have a foot trail leading off of the road.
That's really cool. So do you have any flavor for this spell?
Since it's an instant cast, Tonmer will mutter something under his breath and just lightly touch each of their shoulders as he walks past them to start heading off, as if to make it as inconspicuous as possible in front of literally everybody else.
And after that, what you guys notice is very cool. When you walk, you leave literally no footstep. It doesn't matter how you walk, you leave nothing.
I think Iria is trying to, like, she's, like, purposely...
She's trying to, like, stomp.
Yeah, she's, like, purposely, like, stomping and walking really heavily and just very amused at how it's not leaving a trail.
Subtle.
I call this forced stealth, just in case.
Tonrir, why don't you, since you're kind of leading the charge on this, why don't you go ahead and make a stealth check for just you guys heading past the Covenant Inn, not conspicuously. Give me a check for, like, how convincing it looks that you guys are leaving.
16 plus 10, so 26.
I think you guys catch Ephra watching you out the window as you pass by. And I think you guys keep walking until you're just out of sight, until a tree is just in the way between you and the Covenant Inn. And then you guys head north and veer left into the woods. Yeah?
Yep.
Sounds good.
Yep.
The woods directly north of Sosalia are actually pretty sparse. They're pretty spread out. They're thick enough right north of the buildings that you can't see them. But Tonrir, you're definitely able to find your way, and it's not a difficult journey, even though there's no path. It gets a little harder the further west you go. It starts getting more crowded. And then eventually you guys find yourself on that path that is directly west of Sosalia. Everybody give me a perception check.
It went over the wall of the dice roll.
Oh, what we said could never happen.
17.
27.
I'm also at 27. The dice favor me today.
Not good. Oh, well, actually I have, okay, not as bad as I thought. 17. It was a 9, but I have 8.
Okay. This is a tough check, so it's just going to be Eerie and Tonrir. You guys see east of you, kind of in the distance, you see Sosalia, and you see the last building, Nettle's Apothecary, with those strange taxidermied animals peering out of the windows, and you see that fading dirt road leading into the woods where you are. And beneath your feet, you guys see on the ground beneath you, footsteps, humanoid footsteps. And they look fresh, as if someone has very recently headed into the woods, perhaps even while you guys were having the town meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Tonrir is going to first look to see if Iria is still stomping about.
Oh, no, Iria got tired of that really quick.
Okay, that's good. He's going to hold up a finger, and then he's going to point and illustrate to everybody else the footsteps that are here. He's going to say, these are very fresh and human-like. Very, very fresh. And he, like, makes a point of looking at a twig that was broken and can see, like, the freshness of the wood that's inside the bark of the twig just to show that it hasn't aged. And he says, this had to be within. And then he's going to take a sniff of the twig. Easily within the last hour. Somebody left while we were there in town. Somebody left under the distraction that we were causing.
Who wasn't at the town hall?
I mean, there were 80-something people there. We don't know everyone who resides in that town.
But the one that we did not see there was Ephra's wife. The kids were there. Ephra was there, but the wife was not.
And we can't even assume that Ephra's wife was, like, at home with the kids, like, taking care of them because the kids were there. So we don't know where Ephra's wife was.
I assumed she would be tending to the inn, but if the rest of the town were away, I don't see who she would be tending to.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Iria, you noticed all this too, you know, and you may be a little more tight-lipped about it, but you saw everything. And I think it's because you used to live in quite a wild place. You're not a druid, but you're still, I think, good in the outdoors because that's where you grew up.
Okay, so I noticed, like, the footprint, like, that it was fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I, as far as perception and the connection between the town hall and this, I think Iria intuited all of this similar to Tonrir, because Iria had a relationship with another woman. So she kind of had this, like, underlying connection to Ephra and her wife, because there was that automatic, like, recognition and
the we queer energy.
Yes. So when they did the town hall, she was just background noticing who was there and realized that Ephra's wife wasn't there. So I think she's kind of making that connection in the background of, like, Ephra's wife wasn't there. Ephra is scared of something, but it might not be something directly related to her. So this is all kind of, like, percolating in her mind right now. And then we're running into these footsteps, but she maybe isn't going to say it outright because she's just not sure.
So you guys have a working theory on the footsteps. And what you guys are able to see is that the footsteps head along this path. Is that where you go?
How hard is the traversal just off the path.
It's definitely less comfortable off the path than it is on the path. The survival check off the path is definitely going to be more challenging than the one on the path.
Yeah.
And it will also slow you down to leave the path.
Okay, so with that in mind, Tonmer will say, we can continue on the path and follow the footsteps directly, but we don't know if we will run into them on the path later on, or we can decide to veer off the path and stay parallel to it and work our way further into the woods.
I'm going to say path, just because there's a lot of us. And even if we were in the woods, I feel like we would still be making noise because we're going through all the brush and trees and stuff.
Yeah, I would say that just in that short period of time where we've been walking off the path to circle around the town and get to where we are now, Riva's been sort of struggling through the underbrush, just like getting stuck in thorns and things. And she says, I vote for the path.
Gideon also votes path so that she doesn't have to mess up any of her clothes.
Tonmer nods.
I thought Gideon was all about roughing it.
It's a work in progress.
Roughing it. A tent outside an inn. Let's be clear about this.
A failed tent outside an inn.
Gideon's about that glamping.
Glamping.
Hey, this is Dre Silvertooth, and thank you for listening to episode 28 of Bad Heroes, part 3 of the Wild Hunt arc. First and foremost, I want to thank our new patrons, Caleb Sunstead and Moomba. You two, it means so much to all of us when people enjoy this show enough to support it. Thank you so much. You both are excellent. If you want to join them, you can find us at patreon.com/badheroes. We are trying to get to $150 a month on Patreon, which we will reach if 8 more amazing people sign up at $5 a month. We want to reach that goal because when we do, we'll be able to start regularly commissioning artists to draw your favorite characters and moments from the show. This is great because it brings the show even more to life, and it also supports other independent artists. As a thanks for your support, if we reach our goal, we are giving away a brand new set of Animal Companion stickers to all new and existing patrons. That's stickers of Rulthuin, Ivy, and Tassir. And guys, I think they're really cute. I made them, so I might be a little biased, but I hope you'll get to decide for yourself. Keep an eye on our social media for previews of the designs. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Bad Heroes Cast. We can be emailed at badheroescast@gmail.com. We also want to thank our sponsor, Roll20, for highlighting us last week on their blog. If you are a new listener who found us through Roll20, welcome. I hope you are enjoying our shenanigans. And if you haven't checked out Roll20's virtual tabletop system before, you can create a free account at roll20.net. I think that is about it, friends. Music in this episode includes Smoldering and Scenery by Kai Engel and Fog by Sergei Chiramisinov. Our theme is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane. And that's all for now. I will catch you in the next episode. See you then.
So, you guys head west, and leaves crunch under your feet as the path rapidly becomes narrow. Green ferns encroaching in on its sides and yellow birch and aspen leaves blotting out the sun above you. Deeper in, you can see red oak and maples, brilliant in their autumn glory and old. Tonrir, this is the same type of forest that you were working with Senni in, so you feel right at home. And I would say about 10 minutes in, a squirrel skitters up a tree beside you and chatters irritably at you as you pass.
I do not have it prepped. Otherwise, I would have tried speaking with animals, but...
No talk with squirrel today.
Yeah, talk with a squirrel. But I do not have that prepped. So he's keeping an eye out.
Okay, so you guys walk for about 3 miles before you guys see anything. And you follow this path the whole way.
Are the footsteps there the whole time?
They are, yeah. They're very, very faint. And I think you have to keep stopping to make sure they're there. But sure enough, they are. Let's take a survival check just to see how well you guys are handling this. Because this isn't like a tiny hike, especially if you're not used to it.
I rolled a natural one and my modifier is zero.
Oh my God.
So Reva's not handling this well.
Hey guys, This 3 miles is the longest 3 miles of your life because Reva is dying. Reva is absolutely suffering this entire way.
Also, she is complaining the whole way.
Oh God.
Great. I got a 13.
I got a 21. I think Iria is in her like natural state right now, being in the forest with the trees and the ground. Like where she's from, there was no paved ground. It was all forest. They lived in the forest.
Yeah, it's gorgeous, by the way. It's a little chilly and it's kind of difficult to traverse. It's getting more difficult, but it is gorgeous. And Tanrir, you're not going quite as quickly, but I think it's because you're tracking the footsteps, yeah?
Sure.
You're like, yeah, sure. I'll take that out.
That'll work.
And then Reva, you're absolutely suffering. It takes you guys so long to walk these 3 miles, especially as the path begins to get more narrow. And at this point, the path has become more of a game trail than an actual path. It's starting to head that direction where there are actually like trees on the trail, and it's kind of hard to find the trail.
Tonrier's curious. He's become increasingly curious with what the car salesman said at the shop regarding something keeping the woods in order, in weathered order. That definitely stoked his curiosity. I don't know if anybody would have caught it, but as that was being described, Tonrir did look down and was just like thoughtful for a minute before snap back to reality. Oh, there goes.
You're fired.
Iria was definitely interested in the fact that like Vire has warmed the area around them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically what he described was like global warming,
right?
Except it doesn't seem to affect the capital. And for some reason, it does not seem to affect Sanguine Silvis.
Yeah. Hmm.
And you guys see where the footsteps head, which is down that sort of game trail. Do you guys continue?
Yeah. Tonrir will look back and say, stay close behind me and you'll find the easiest path. And Rothwain will just work on flying up above the canopy.
Reva is pretty sure that everyone is lying when they say that there's a trail that they're following. Because as far as she can tell, we're just like stomping through trees and bushes and vines and thorns. And she is really uncomfortable and there's like bugs biting her and she's just having a bad time.
Gideon, how are you doing?
So, once again, just to double check, because of that book, I'm swapping what my normal survival thing is, which is wisdom, to, you said, intelligence?
Yep, because you're using the information you know, the things that you've read, directly translating it into being able to do this well.
Let me make a note of that real quick, but I got a 19.
Okay, yeah, you're actually doing pretty good. You're not, like, loving it. Your clothes are catching.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, it's just okay.
It's going just okay. Because of Reva, it's going real slow. You guys are going real slow. And just when the path is getting so bad that, honestly, it's even hard for you to see it, Tonrir, even hard for you, Iria, you guys see something. You guys see, pressed into the trunk of a massive oak tree, a crimson handprint.
Ew.
But the thing is, it doesn't look like a humanoid handprint. Not quite. It's almost a humanoid handprint. But it has claws.
Tonrir is going to stop and just hold up a hand and bring a finger to his lips for quiet to make sure that everybody else is still.
Do we have to check for that to see if we're actually still?
No.
Or if we're reading.
Well, I just meant for Reva. Like, Tonrir was like, everyone be quiet. And then Reva comes crashing through a bush.
She crashes to a halt.
Oh my God, it sounds like the sun. It's amazing how many things sound like the sun.
Amazing. Does Tonrir see that handprint on anything else?
No, you only see the one.
Okay. Tonrir is going to silently point at the handprint and then look back at the others. And he's going to motion for them to wait there. And then what he's going to do is he's going to see about approaching it to get a closer look while like being extra cautious of all of his surroundings because of what he sees.
Okay. Give me a nature check.
Yay. That'll be a 27, boss.
So you approach this handprint, this really ominous, sort of bloody looking handprint. And as you approach it, it's not blood. In fact, you're pretty positive it's berry juice, but it sure looks like blood.
Lick it.
Gotta be sure.
There's no insect, though.
Lem.
Tonrir will make a point of examining it to see if it's fresh or if it's just been, if it's dried out for a long time.
And does he do so by licking it?
It looks like it's been put there in the last couple of days.
Okay. And does Tonrir see any other disturbance in the foliage at his feet around there? Did we keep sight on the footprints up to this point?
You did, but actually you look around to see where it continues and you can't quite tell. It seems like even the game trail seems to have stopped here.
Okay. Given that there's claws, Tonrir would like to look around to see if he's able to see wild animal footprints.
The trees are extremely close together here, and it's very difficult to maneuver, but you do not see footprints on the ground. In fact, most of what you see, what you become really aware of, is the fact that it took you guys so long to get here that the moon is starting to hang in the sky, and it's nearly full.
Okay. The last thing Tonrir will do is look up into the trees just to make sure nothing else is up there.
Give me a nature check.
I love nature checks. That's like my favorite.
It's like your whole jam.
25.
Do you climb up that tree?
Actually, here's what Tonrir is going to do. Tonrir is going to signal for Rulthuin to perch in the tree up above as a lookout.
What Rulthuin sees in that tree is a muddy footprint on the branch.
So as Rulthuin lands there on a branch, Tonrir is going to notice Rulthuin looking down at something specifically, and he's going to look back to the other group. There's something up there that I need to check out, but everybody else keep an eye out around here. I need to take a look.
So the rest of you, what you mostly notice is that night is coming and you guys seem to have lost the path.
Cool.
Trackless step probably would have worn off an hour or two ago.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Tonrir will climb the tree and just see that there's a muddy footprint, you said?
Yep.
Okay.
Fresh mud or?
It's fresh. So what it looks like is the trail stopped here because people stopped walking on the ground.
People?
Yeah, well, he's going to just kind of look out and around at that plane up above just to see if there's anything else noticeable.
That particular tree, the branches up there look worn as if they are regularly walked on. Mm. But with that nature check, you are not able to discern the path that they take beyond that.
Yep. Okay. That makes sense. Tonrir will come back down and say, well, the reason that the trail ends here is because it begins up there. And he points up toward the tree. Seems there's a footprint up there, but I can't really see where it goes, at least not just yet. But I'm thinking that if we camp a little bit further away from here, we can rest for the evening and pick back up tomorrow.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Reva is wandering around just a little bit near where everyone had stopped while Tonrir was investigating. She got a little bored.
Reva, you hear water.
She heads in that direction.
With just by herself?
Like without, does without she say anything?
Well, is it far away water or?
I mean, it doesn't sound that far.
Okay.
So we look around and Reva's just gone.
There's no Reva. You're like, what do you think, guys? Oh, fuck, we lost Reva again.
She's just going to, like, walk a little bit that way to see if she can see the source of the water. If she doesn't, within a few minutes, she'll head back to the group.
Gideon, you see Reva leaving.
Gideon's not going to say anything. She's just going to turn to Tonrir and say, I think making camp sounds nice. Shall we go?
Let's venture a little bit further away from this path, just to not have something come across us while we
rest. Reva, as you trek alone away from the group, you eventually come across a clearing. And on the other side of that clearing is a slow-moving stream. And you actually suspect it's the same stream you saw east of Sosalia continuing through the
woods. Hey guys, found some water over here.
Is that it?
Yes.
And a beautiful clearing.
And a 5-star hotel.
And a pony.
And a pony.
Oh God, Ivan's here.
Water sounds good. My water skin is actually a little bit low, so I definitely like to fill that up.
We should make it hasty and not linger around the water, though. Where there's a water source, other creatures aren't bound to show up.
Tonray nods in agreement, but is nevertheless curious to take a look at what Reva found.
Okay, you guys head over there, and you guys see that this clearing is beautiful. And in the stream, you see reflected the red, orange, and yellow of the forest, and it's breathtaking. And Tonrir, you know that in the spring, this clearing would be filled with purple bluebells, maybe primrose, and they would just carpet the earth beneath you in brilliant color. But for what you see that's practical, all you see is the stream.
Mm-hmm. When Tonrir gets to the stream itself and he looks around, he's kind of struck with that a little bit of a nostalgia just at what had been. And he's looking around and just getting that wholesomeness. And then he gets that moment of thoughtfulness again that was at the shop. And then starts thinking about how similar his woods were to this. Then he shakes himself from that and looks around the clearing and says, well, if we're to make camp, I wouldn't suggest doing it in the clearing because we will be vulnerable from all sides. If anybody that is looking out, I suggest that we camp a little bit further away from here so that way we're obscured from view.
Okay. You guys just tell me what kind of place you camp in and tell me real quick how you kind of make camp.
Tonmo will probably work on just getting stuff for a small campfire, secluded enough from view, but that is nestled around a couple of trees so that there's spots to lean back and rest against.
Yeah, Gideon's going to follow Tonrir's lead because she trusts that he knows best about like camping and the woods, obviously. And she's going to take out the pack with the tent in it and kind of plop it in front of Iria.
Yeah, I think Iria is going to follow them just so she knows where camp is and may consider going to fill her water skin later or in the morning. And then she sees the tent plopped beside her and offers to put it up.
Aw, that's nice of you.
Reva follows the group, and as soon as she sees Iria starting to set up the tent, she finds a patch of ground and flops over on her back. Just lies there.
Just dead.
So eventually, through Iria's work, there is a tent, and eventually, through Tanra's work, there is a fire. And you guys find yourself in sort of this forested little area with a fire not too close to any of the trees and not too close to the tent. And it's actually pretty cozy. And as the temperature starts to drop towards freezing, I think you guys probably all gather together around the fire. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gideon doesn't really adjust to be near to the fire because it's not an issue for her.
Rolthawain is probably going to be nearby, but is just looking for like a field mouse or something to get dinner with.
Aw.
So yeah, Tonrir will, after everything seems settled, he sits with his knees up toward his chest and just is perching his chin on top of his arms that rest upon his knees. And he's finally taking a moment to just relax. And he doesn't look at the fire directly. He looks just off to the side of it, not thinking about what he's doing. And he looks up around the forest and kind of thinks out loud, it's almost like home.
Iria lays her bedroll down next to the fire and then puts her pack at one end of the bedroll, lays down on her back and like puts her arms behind her head and just kind of like reclines and crosses her legs, looks super comfortable. And when Tanrir says that, Iria says, yeah, I have a sense of comfort in this place. It's not like the jungle I grew up in, but it's very similar. I miss the trees and the forest and the sounds of the creatures.
He raises his head slightly to look more toward Iria before plopping his chin down again and says, what did home feel like for you?
It was cozy and lush, and there was always people talking. There was always conversation going on and music. God, there was always music playing. I miss that so much. Tell me about your home.
There's that like slight little flinch that's just in the hollow of his chest before he composes himself and he says, it wasn't too dissimilar to this. The trees offer their own path above the ground as well as below. And the druids, alongside myself, worked on curating an entire forest, likely bigger than this one, to be a pinnacle of what balance in nature can achieve. For all of the roots that we directed into the ground and all of the branches that we arched up toward the sky, we lived a very simple life. Our job was to simply ensure the balance in all things. And it was good.
That sounds beautiful.
Tanrir nods and says, "It was. So when I'm looking here, such a striking resemblance. It's almost uncanny."
"Why did you leave?"
Tanrir is silent for a few moments, and he brings himself up a little bit and says, "There was a fire that I was far away from initially. When we fought Lord Oberon, the memories were brought back in full. I got to relive it. And it wasn't until we were back at the capital most recently that both myself and Gideon," and he looks over to Gideon.
While this conversation's happening, Gideon is kind of quietly, she has her journal open and that like survival book open, both balanced in one hand, and she's writing things down in her journal. She's referencing the book and she's just studying the tent that Iria erected, but just doing so quietly. So just so you know what she's doing in the background.
Yeah. Tanrir looks over toward Gideon and just nods and says, "It wasn't until we were both in the capital that we had found out that our homes were changed to make way for the kingdom."
"The kingdom of Vire?"
He nods.
"Vire did that?"
He's tapping his index finger on his bottom lip, and he said, "To make way for the expansion of Vire."
"God, that's awful. I had no idea. I mean, I had an idea Vire wasn't the nicest place to other places, but I had no idea."
He composes himself again and he says, "As of now, it's a place of trade. The forest has been greatly diminished, and it is my hope that one day I will be able to go back there and heal it and start again on making it what it once was. And it leads me with a curiosity about this place." And he says, looking up, like that thoughtful expression again, and he says, "There was an artifact that I had been aware of that was capable of restoring forests and nature itself at a very vast, maybe incomprehensible rate. And I can't help but wonder if something like that is here to protect this entire forest from what is happening outside of it. If anything, it's driving my ambition to understand where we are going."
Riva's overhearing this conversation and she props herself up on her elbow. She's still laying on her back and chimes in and says, "You know, the weirdest thing about all of this is Vire is so big now, but it wasn't like that before."
"You were there long ago. What was it like?"
"I mean, it was just farms and cows. Nothing like it is now. None of those towers and spires. It was... most of the towns around the capital were kind of like Sosalia. And the capital itself was just a little bit bigger than that. Vire at the time was just one of many kingdoms, all around the same size. They all traded with each other, and Vire's only real claim to fame was its hellmouths. These kind of holes in the ground with smoke coming out. And those showed up just about the same time as Queen Aurelia did and the House of Fane. That's the other thing. The House of Fane didn't always rule Vire. Aurelia, she was the first one. And there were all these rumors at the time that she was the one who summoned the hellmouths and the demons and everything from hell. that she was a really powerful sorceress and that she was evil. But then I met her and she didn't seem evil, you know? Not like the queen now. What's her name?
Saphira?
Right, Saphira. I don't know what crawled up Saphira's butt and died.
The snake slowly pokes its head out of Tondra's robe and stares directly at you. And then slowly retracts back into the hood.
Reva kind of like, she was sort of lit by the firelight and she kind of leans into the darkness.
So Gideon has kind of made her way into the tent. Like the tent is fully open and welcome for anyone who wants to use it. But she's inside the tent and still taking notes and looking at how things were put up and how it's standing and things like that. And how much of a better job Iria did than she did. And then she calls out and says, "Hey, Iria?
Yeah?
Could you come here, please?"
Iria kind of gives a sigh and gets up from her very comfortable position and steps into the tent.
Gideon looks like troubled, like she can't quite figure out how to say the words that she wants to say. And she looks from Iria to her journal and the book to the tent to Iria again a few times before she says, I just want to say you have done a great job of putting up this tent. And as much as it pains me to say this, I could not figure it out from just reading this seemingly instructional manual. Would you be willing to teach me how you did this?
Iria kind of gives a warm smile because that was super nice and not expected of Gideon. And Iria says, "Of course. Yeah. I mean, I've lived in the forest my whole life, so it just is kind of ingrained in me. I would love to teach you. It's sometimes things we learn are better learned by hand and not read."
Great. Thank you. You can go now.
Iria steps back out and gets comfortable on her bedroll.
Was this an earshot of Tonrir?
Yeah.
He's been kind of staring off the side of the fire with this shocked look on his face.
Aww. Yeah, that was very cute.
I think Iria is going to kind of pick up where Reva left off and taking into account what Tonrir was saying and say, I mean, I know Vire is supposed to be literally hell on Earth, and I didn't know all of these things about Vire expanding and ruining homes and forests. That's awful. But, wow, the culture there. While we were staying, you know, after our last adventure, it was magnificent. Everything is so rich and vibrant, and the artists are incredibly talented and supportive of everyone. I felt like I belonged. And I mean, I belonged at home too, but this was different. I was immediately welcomed and taken on an adventure of the underground musings of Vire. At home, it's more, you know, I was born there, I'm part of the clan, of course I belong. But Vire, I shouldn't belong, but I just felt so good. It's so hard to reconcile this experience that I've had with the experiences that you've had with Vire.
Tonrir looks thoughtful for a second as he's listening, and he says, "Some people only know how to make a home with logs instead of with trees. I will admit that the capital is alluring. For it to have its own nature reserve, to have a place where you can further your talents with your music, for a place of great knowledge and history. But it's all," and he stops to think on it for a second, "it's all curated. It's all like a facade."
I think you guys talk until you become tired. And I think that you guys start to curl up and sleep, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As you guys curl up, as you guys begin to sleep,
in a tree, on the ground, in a tent. You guys hear someone clearing their throat. And when you look, you see in the dying firelight a figure. They have long, wild hair shaved on one side and eyes that reflect the fire. They're topless, with muscled shoulders and a tattoo that runs from sternum to navel. And their voice rumbles deep in the earth when they say, "You lost, strangers?" You guys all see that this figure is not alone. A dozen eyes reflect the firelight back at you from within the trees. And the figure says, "It's time to turn around and leave. You're not welcome here." And guys, you were looking for werewolves. Well, you found them.